The citizen has a problem with the WTO!
WTO, sir!
President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton.
If the WTO expects to have public support grow for our endeavors, the public must see and hear and in a very real sense actually join in the deliberations. That's the only way they can know the process is fair and know their concerns were at least considered. And we are called upon here to meet against a background of a lot of people coming here to protest. Some of them, I think, have a short memory or maybe no memory of what life was like in most of your countries not so very long ago. So let me say again, I condemn the small number who were violent and who tried to prevent you from meeting. But I'm glad the others showed up because they represent millions of people who are now asking questions about whether this enterprise, in fact, will take us all where we want to go. And we ought to welcome their questions and be prepared to give an answer. Let me just say, I know there's a lot of controversy about this. And as all of you know, I'm about to enter the last year of my presidency. I will not be around to deal with the aftermath. But I'm telling you, I've been in this business a long time. And in the end, we all serve and function at the sufferance of the people, either with their active support or their silent acquiescence. What they are telling us in the streets here is, this was an issue we used to be silent on. We're not going to be silent on it anymore. We haven't necessarily given up on trade, but we want to be heard. The sooner the WTO opens up the process and lets people representing those who are outside in, the sooner we will see fewer demonstrations, more constructive debate, and a broader level of support in every country for the direction that every single person in this room knows that we ought to be taking into the 21st century. So we can do it a little bit now and a little bit later. We can drag our feet or we can run through an open door. But my preference is to open the meetings, open the records, and let people file their opinions. No one, no sensible person expects to win every argument, and no one ever does. But in a free society, people want to be heard, and human dignity and political reality demand it today.
There's no immediate danger. They're blocks away, but they are moving. We need tactical here at the van. Anyone from tactical who can come and represent here at the van, please come over. If you know any information that can confirm or deny this, please come to the van now. Safety zone and medics.
We're standing out here at the corner of 7th and Pine, and reports from the tactical unit of the protesters centralized at their tactical van here report that police are moving towards this area and that both tear gas and pepper spray is being used. Certainly tear gas is being used, as I've experienced it myself and felt the burning in the eyes and throat. Helicopters are beginning to hover overhead, and certainly it seems that more likely than not the police are ready to begin to make their move to try and break up this protest. The police have begun to release tear gas in order to disperse the crowd. And we are here on the line. Police are releasing tear gas, putting on their gas masks right now. Why are you gassing this crowd, sir? Why are you releasing tear gas into this crowd?
Nothing to provoke you. Why are you doing this?
Keep the peace!
The buses. They were shooting pepper spray at a guy.
Yeah.
Pepper spray up by the buses, and I hear tear gas over at 6th and University.
Starting the riot. Yeah, they're the ones who are having the civil disobedience.
Welcome to the fourth installment of our program, The Battle in Seattle, the WTO Inside and Out. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. In the last week of November and first week of December of 1999, thousands of delegates, journalists, and protesters came to Seattle, Washington for the World Trade Organization's ministerial meetings. The WTO Secretariat, the United States, and the European Union favored a new round of neoliberalism, a further relaxation of trade barriers and tariffs to continue the process that's come to be known as globalization. Inside the World Trade Organization, fractures were beginning to erupt between those from the so-called developing world and those countries and economies that make up the first world. In the streets of Seattle, thousands upon thousands of protesters had succeeded in temporarily shutting down the World Trade Organization gathering. The police and a small group of protesters both escalated in their aggressiveness, with police attacking protesters with tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets, and a small group of so-called anarchists embarking on a spree of property destruction in downtown Seattle. We talked with Mayor Paul Schell about the protests and the ramifications of what had happened in the Emerald City.
Looking back, I guess I'd say that maybe we shouldn't have tried so hard to get it because Seattle's doing fine, doesn't need it. Same. Having said that, we've got a lot of important issues to discuss in the world, and that the globalization of the economy is not a policy choice. It's real, and that what's happened is it's far outstripped our ability to deal with very important issues for society, from the environment to human rights to the rights to organize. These are complicated issues, and they need to be on the agenda. We need to have the WTO make its decisions in a much more open and accountable fashion. That, in many ways, I looked at what's happened here as bad imaging for the city, for sure. Nobody mayor wants to see a city with as beautiful as ours and as compassionate and caring with scenes of riot police and tear gas. Least of all me. I marched in the Vietnam anti-war parades and civil rights, even. I'm that old. But of the 35,000 people who were downtown, 34-plus behaved themselves, marched, delivered their message in a very constructive way, and in fact helped us deal with those who were bound and determined to shut down the WTO and to not let the debate go on. And free speech belongs to everybody, even those we disagree with, in my mind, and that wasn't acceptable. But if I had started off with an armed camp here and an eight-block perimeter with the riot police and armed and the National Guard and not allowed the protest to occur, we'd be seeing a different set of images about the city of a city that free speech isn't allowed and it was a police state. That is not Seattle. And I'm pleased that nobody got seriously injured. People got hurt. Tear gas hurts. Anything hurts. And I don't like to see that. But nobody got seriously hurt. And the ministerial began. That the citizens got a way to effectively put these issues on the national and the global agenda. Those are all good things.
Do you really think that the protests will be effective in getting the WTO ministers to really begin to start looking at the concerns of the thousands of people that showed up here?
I think so. And I think there already was interest among a number of the delegates. Understand, the WTO is just a forum for 130 countries to talk to each other. There are issues here that need to be addressed by the United Nations. There are issues here that need to be addressed by the United States government. That when we shout at other people, we need to look at our own house and see what we're doing to use precious resources. The results will be in the proof of pudding. I do know this, though. Breaking windows isn't going to convince anybody. And that acting like hooligans has the danger of trumping a very serious and substantive message, and that's something I don't want to see lost here. People ought to pay attention to the issues, not how the issues are being discussed, not the messenger.
Mayor Paul Schell, thank you.
Thank you.
In the aftermath of the police use of tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets to disperse crowds of protesters in Seattle, and the approximate $2.5 million in property damage done by the so-called anarchists, the media began to focus almost exclusively on that aspect of what was happening. But the real story remained the issues of world trade and globalization that brought the thousands of people from around the country and around the world to Seattle to express their opinions about the World Trade Organization.
Peter Rossett and Anuradha Mittal of Food First.
We're here because the trade liberalization that's being set in the treaty law by the WTO is depressing the wages of working people around the planet and contributing to the intensification of poverty, hunger, and the growing disparity between rich and poor. We think it's just wrong. We think that it runs counter to the most basic of human rights, the right to a life with dignity, the right to a home, the right to health care, the right to a living wage.
Well, this is for people around the world. As we know, the trade liberalization has done nothing for the working people. Hunger is increasing in this country as well. When from 30 million, the number has increased to 36 million. And the same goes for developing countries. We're told that free trade is the answer against hunger, poverty, and we all know it has not worked. And we are here to protest and to say it's got to end now.
Having been inside listening to some of the official people who are affiliated with the World Trade Organization, they have a completely opposite view. It almost seems like they're living on a different planet. I don't quite understand how they don't get what's going on here.
Well, what's happened is that those people have been so bought up by the corporations that they're only taking care of the corporate interest. And when they are having panels to talk about the benefits of trade liberalization, they are very unbalanced panels. When the other view, the view of the third world, the view of the marginalized in this country is not represented. So we have to take a step back and think for ourselves and decide for ourselves what's good for us and fight for that.
The issues of the so-called third world have been a major unifying force in anti-WTO protests, both in the streets and within the World Trade Organization. Martin Kaur from Malaysia and with the Third World Network is a leader in attempting to make globalization become a force that will benefit the mass of humanity. Kaur, who would also address the collected ministers at the non-governmental organization symposium held by the World Trade Organization, was in the streets of Seattle. We spoke with him there.
From the point of view of civil society in the South, in the developing countries, we find that many of the existing agreements in the WTO are biased against the poor in our countries. The agriculture agreement, for example, prevents our governments from giving subsidies to the farmers in the future. It will get our tariffs on food products down. It will make our farmers in many countries uncompetitive versus cheap imports coming from Europe, for example, that is very heavily subsidized. And the farmers may lose their jobs, their livelihoods. So this is only one example. You have other examples in the area of intellectual property rights, in the area of investment measures, in the area of subsidies, which are detrimental to the interests of developing countries. We are asking our governments in the WTO to demand from the rich governments that the views of developing country communities are heard in the WTO and that the agreements are changed to reflect the interests of the developing countries. Now, if this is to happen, we cannot afford a new round of new issues being proposed by the European Union. We don't want to have a new agreement on investment, procurement, competition policy. We don't want new issues like labor standards to enter the WTO at this time, at least. We don't want a new working group on biotechnology. These are all new proposals which would make the situation even more biased against the developing countries and would produce social and economic catastrophe in the next 10 to 20 years. So what we are here for is to try to prevent the design of a future catastrophe. We want the present design, which is flawed, to be changed and improved in order to prevent this kind of catastrophe.
Can the World Trade Organization actually be reformed, or does it need to be scrapped and something new put in?
This is a $1 trillion question we have to answer in the next 3 years. So far, my organization is giving it the benefit of the doubt. It can be reformed only if the developing countries inside are stronger. It can be reformed only if the northern governments do not listen so much to their own transnational corporations and take into account the interests of the world as a whole, and it can be reformed only if the system of decision-making is changed in the WTO. And this is what the public here is asking for. We are demanding for these reforms and changes. I am afraid that if the reforms do not come soon, and if the consequences of the present system continues, then the credibility will become so low that in future reform will not be possible. Whether we call it globalization or not, there are many civil society groups around the world who see that our problems lie in the global system. And we feel that the way to respond to it would also be to connect ourselves globally so that we can respond to the global institutions as we are doing here in Seattle.
International solidarity was an oft-used phrase in Seattle, Washington. At the center of that was international labor solidarity. In addition to unionists from around the world, many of America's most powerful unions were represented, most of those at the Big March.
Avenue now, and it's wall-to-wall people, or as far as I can see, up and down the street. This doesn't give the WTO a message. I just don't know what will. If it sounds like these people got it going on, believe me, they do. Standing on 4th Avenue, and I'd have to say that we have to be talking thousands and thousands of people out here carrying all different types of signs, but all one thing in common: to shut down the World Trade Organization. And certainly if the U.S. government and the WTO and the International Secretariat don't get the message from anything else, I think they should probably get it from this right here, because this is just absolutely one fantastic merge. Wall to wall, sidewalk to sidewalk, up and down 4th Avenue as far as you can see in either direction.
One of the labor unions represented in the Big March, of course, was the Teamsters. One of the most interesting things about being in Seattle during the WTO protest was that you would never know who you might run into. We turned the corner and ran into Teamster leader Jimmy Hoffa Jr.
We're sending a message to the world that we're not going to take any more of this WTO top-down, dribble-down economics. So what we're going to do is build a base for all workers throughout the world. We're going to end child labor. We're going to end prison labor. We're going to end the persecution of people. We're going to standardize what we're doing throughout the world. That's the answer. So we have fair trade. That's the answer.
All of the events and excitement going on in Seattle during the week, it might be easy to overlook the fact that such events protests and activities very often don't come off well without a lot of work prior to having them happen. We talked with Jeremy Madsen of People for Fair Trade.
We've been here for about 5 months now, and our goal has been to put together, first of all, get a bunch of people excited about the World Trade Organization. I think we've been somewhat successful in that. And then also to put together some protests in the street, as well as some, educational sessions and workshops and opportunities for people to lobby the government officials who are here in town, and, really hopefully make a major change in the way trade policy is conducted in this country.
I heard you talking earlier to someone, and you were saying you weren't so much a policy guy, you were an organizer.
Right.
Talk a little bit about being an organizer.
Okay. Today being an organizer simply meant, everybody else is out in the street, and everybody else is having fun, and they're going to forums, and they're schmoozing and being schmoozed and all that. And I sat here at a desk, and I answered the phone, repeatedly, and I'd say there were probably a good 30 crises at any one time. There were maybe like, 8 of them. And I had to fix them all. People are like, rooms are getting canceled and other rooms need to be found, and stuff is going wrong in the street, and I'm like, sending out volunteers and like getting that going. And it's not very glamorous work. It's very tiring. It's very hard. It doesn't pay a lot of money, but it's what needs to get done in order to make this whole thing work.
Well, it's certainly the stuff that makes these kinds of things work. It's real easy to be out there getting the glory, if there is such a thing, and there's always somebody like Jeremy Madsen who's back trying to make sure the doors stay open and the lights stay on and the volunteers get wherever they're going. Try, if you can, to give our listeners a little bit of an idea about what goes on here during, a day.
It depends. I mean, that really has changed over the course of the course of the months, and it really, our office has been meant to provide for what is necessary. A good example, back in, I think it was early October, we started off and opened up the day. We cleaned this thing up, and if you look around, if you could look around, this place is a mess. It usually is. We don't have a lot of money, so everything here is donated or borrowed. But we had the bureau chiefs of all the foreign, Asian and European daily and weekly magazines and newspapers in here, about 30 people sitting in the back table over here, trying to have a real serious business meeting, for most of the morning. That ended, and we immediately like turned this place in. We brought a bunch of like theater folks and music people in here, and by the end of the day, we'd moved all the desks and taken down all the tables and chairs, and suddenly this turns into a hip hop concert club for the evening, which goes into about 2 a.m. So in the course of the day, we went from really one extreme, guys in button down suits, and it's really kind of as professional as we could make this, to the club music atmosphere. I mean, that's what this place is about. It serves the needs that it needs to serve.
It certainly seems that you're doing a lot of work here. It looks like you're also providing space for other people, too.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, one of the things that this has been for is, a lot of organizations didn't necessarily have the capacity to send somebody out here and then also provide for an office for them. So we've really tried to be a place where people can come and do their work, be a kind of, this is like the touch place for a lot of different organizations. We've got the National Radio Project here in the back room that's doing their thing out of here. We're trying to serve as many needs as we can without getting stretched too far to where we don't like accomplish anything.
It certainly seems that for someone to take on the job that you've taken on, you have to be pretty committed to what's going on. Why is this so important to you?
Well, I think, I mean, you probably heard me saying this to other people out there. I really think trade is one of these issues, one of the few issues, maybe the only issue, which, and to even call it an issue is wrong. It's something, it's a set of policies that cut across things that people care about. Personally, I care about the environment. I care about working people. I care about human rights. I care just basically about people getting a fair shake. And if trade policy is conducted improperly, which I believe it is right now, that affects everybody. Okay, that makes the rich richer, the poor poorer, and the environment worse off. So working on trade issues allows you to affect all those things you care about in one fell swoop.
But not everyone in the streets of Seattle was pleased with the efforts of people like Jeremy Madsen in successfully organizing protests.
I hear you saying that you think these protests are ridiculous. Why do you feel that way?
Because I think they're taking... I think the unions are good they're here, because that's for human rights. But all these splintered groups does absolutely no good for anything, because there's no commonality among anybody.
Do you understand? I see so many different groups
that there's nothing to them. That's just what I think, okay? So I'm not against it. I'm for it, okay? But I think it should be done in a way where some commonality of some groups...
Nothing here, now we're all people.
This is the greatest, this is the most common...
So I'm not opposed to it. I think it's a good idea.
Do you understand how these people feel that they've been locked out of any of these discussions and that their world's being taken away from them?
And they're right.
All right, then. What can I say?
But do you understand that, though?
I'm sympathetic with the situation, sure. Okay? But you should still be able to get in your hotel. I don't know what good does
tomorrow,
doing boycotts
tomorrow,
and stuff like that,
tonight.
Okay? I don't understand that. Boycotts, to me, don't work. They tried it in California Europe with grapes and all that kind of stuff.
That didn't work.
I just don't think boycotts work.
On the streets, even though confrontations between police and protesters became somewhat scattered and sporadic, the tension and potential for violence remained high.
I've just been walking from like different police gatherings to different police gatherings around town here, and it's pretty amazing, you know, millions of cops out here to protect what, I don't know.
The pavement
and the different buildings and, you know, make sure, you know, that we are orderly and, you know.
Well, they certainly seem to be pretty determined. I don't see anybody doing anything. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, well, we're all waiting, I think, is the whole thing. We're just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. Just being, you know, citizens here and, like, practicing democracy, and I don't think they like it too much.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really impressed by the uniforms. I mean, it's kind of futuristic Terminator-looking stuff, isn't it?
The RoboCop, I think.
What's kind of funny about that, though, there's many knives made that can pierce that very easily.
I was over at the McDonald's that they closed off when there was a rally earlier, and a window must have been broken or something, and they sent, you know, the big truck down and, you know, all that, and it was, of course they have to protect McDonald's corporate interest, you know. I think WTO is just another form of global corporate dominance that's been going on since World War I, you know. I mean, before that, you know, but it's the same old thing, you know, and everything's been happening the same. It's just more accumulation of profit, you know, in the hands of the rich, trying to tell us that it's good for us and shut up and take it.
While there certainly are any number of people who feel that the WTO is an extension of just the same old thing, there is certainly a new wrinkle that is coming down the pike that could change everything. That is the issue of the WTO and China. We'll take a look at some of the issues revolving around China's potential admission to the World Trade Organization in our next program. Thank you for tuning in to this installment of The Battle in Seattle, the WTO Inside and Out. The program is made possible with support from KVMR FM Radio, Nevada City, the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The program is produced at Full Logic Reverse Studios. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We invite you to join us next time for another installment of The Battle in Seattle, the WTO Inside and Out.
So, the citizen has a problem with the WTO!
WTO, sir!